way.
And, of course, that was simply 6 months after the war began. And, of
course,
don't you think that General Doolittle's flight over Tokyo really was more psychological than anything else, but tended to break the will of the Japanese?
Absolutely. The fact that he, as I told you, the Pearl Harbor fleet had been practically halfway around the world. They left Japan in November, and they were almost 5 months later, they were coming home. And when they were just coming in to port, into the inland sea, where they had all the Japanese little flower girls out with big bouquets to greet them when they came in and so on, and that's when Doolittle's planes went over. And that panicked Admiral Yamamoto, more or less, because he was looking at the fact that the Emperor was in the palace. And that was a no-no, to have anybody fly next to the Emperor.
Sure.
So they immediately planned the Battle of Midway, and they did it so fast that they resorted to radio, and we broke the code. Whereas Pearl Harbor, they never, never said one word about it on the radio.
And, of course, once we knew what they were going to do, it was simply a matter of just beginning to bring all of our military force, focusing it in on Midway. And, of course, that then would be the end of the effectiveness of the Japanese fleet.
Yeah, well, we didn't know, you know, they were speculating whether they were going to Alaska or going to Midway. And the decision was made that they were coming to Midway, and consequently, that's where we concentrated our force.
Well, now, of course, the Japanese did actually attack the Aleutian Islands, didn't they, and take one...
That was a diversionary force to make us think that that's where they were going. And they had you're right, they had an aircraft carrier up there, and they attacked that too, and some of the islands in the Alaskan chain. But that was not a strategic objective so much as it was a diversionary move.
Well, of course, that's standard military tactics, isn't it? That's how we were able to get in at Normandy in Europe, because the Germans kept thinking we were going to attack in a different area, and they wouldn't pull their military force back to Normandy.
Exactly.
Well, actually, of course, you know, that Battle of Midway could have gone either direction, couldn't it?
Well, if we had have lost, if the losses had been reversed, it would have been, I think it would have extended the length of the war maybe over a year or two. But we, of course, the thing that the Japanese could not comprehend was our industrial capacity.
And, of course, we were
able to... As a matter of fact, Admiral Yamamoto was always quarreling with the Japanese general because he had been doing all his fighting in China, and Yamamoto had actually been to England, Europe, United States, and he knew that if the industrial capacity of the Western world got wound up to peak capacity, the Japanese couldn't compete with it.
In fact, he really wasn't in favor of the war at all, was he?
No.
And I think
well, that was why. You see, after when you, the American people ought to be proud of themselves because it was the what they did had Rosie the Riveter and they were. You know, running 3 8-hour shifts a day and all the thing, and we saved Europe not once but twice.
You're talking about the First World War and the Second World War.
Yeah.
And, of course, it really was America's industrial capacity, the ability down the line even to turn out even a ship a day at some of the major shipyards. And so we could just keep putting the ships out, they'd sink them, and there'd be more ships and more ships until eventually the Japanese and the Germans were simply overwhelmed by our industrial capacity.
Absolutely. That's the key, logistics support. And at the outset, the German submarines were just raising Cain with our ships. But we went into anti-submarine posture, and it was, I think, September 1943 when the battle changed. In other words, in a submarine war is an attrition war, and when you can build ships faster than the enemy can sink them and sink his submarines faster than he can build them, the war's over.
And, of course, we were actually bombing their submarine bases in right along the north coast there, weren't we, so that they didn't have a safe haven to bring their submarines back in.
That's right.
Well,
we were doing everything we could to those submarines.
Well, it was an amazing, amazing time, and it's just, I think it's really a tribute to the courage of the men who fought, you know, that we were able to survive that terrible, terrible war. Or another terrible war, because, of course, the average American really didn't want to get involved in the Second World War, because many of them really were questioning why we'd gotten involved in the First World War. Do you think that one reason why the administration perhaps did not warn Admiral Kimmel was because they needed some means of getting the American people behind the war effort?
Oh, yeah, I think that was part of it. Once they got behind it, and once the public at large recognized the threat, if Germany had have acquired all of Europe, for instance, and the Japanese would have been successful in the Pacific, they were going to make certain, they being the American workers, were going to be sure that didn't happen. And so, as you just said, building a ship a day, building all the new combat equipment and so on, and everybody turned to, and that was the end of the Germans.
And of course, really, the ability to build the aircraft. I mean, we built literally tens of thousands of aircraft, and they would shoot them down over Europe, and we'd just send new fleets in, the next day. And eventually, of course, the Germans, especially with the damage that was done by our strategic bombing, just could no longer continue to field their air force. Well, we're going to have to take another quick break here, and when we get back, if you're out in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Dr. Admiral Thomas Moore, who certainly is in many ways a living legend, one of the most revered of our military men today, why give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now I just want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported. We don't have anybody behind us. We don't have any foundations or big corporations, or we don't carry advertisements. We just try to bring you the truth and hope that there are enough of you out there across America who agree with what we do that you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do best, and that is just bringing you interesting guests and trying to put things into their proper historical perspective. So if you agree with our message and you'd like to become part of our team, our telephone number, 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And, of course, we hope that you'll tell other people about our programs. You'll tell them about our website, which is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And for those who have access to Internet radio, they can get our programs 4 hours every day, or they can get our archive programs, which are kept up there for 30 days. And during that time, of course, we have the opportunity to people can listen to the program several times, because many times these are historical interviews. And so if you'd like to, of course, help us, why, remember the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Help us by duplicating our newsletter, by copying our tapes and distributing them. You feel have our permission to copy any of the videos that we have made, and help us to get the truth before the American people. Again, 1-800-544-8927.
Could Would you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-based education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs-Hopker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment of the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for outcome-based education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon, Admiral Thomas Moore, and of course our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we have with us Herman from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you today?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Stan. I want to thank Admiral Moore for being a guest and for the service that you and other veterans played in the Second World War and following in giving us freedom, keeping freedom alive here in America.
Thank you, Admiral Moore. Did you get Herman's remarks?
Yes, thank you very much.
Now, I had a question. What role do you believe the hand of Providence or God's hand has played in helping America in its history? I know the Founding Fathers certainly felt that in the Revolutionary War that they could see God's hand in it.
I think it had a tremendous role as a you know, we used to say, no atheists in the foxhole. And, so when a man gets in a position where he recognizes that his, life is in, jeopardy, almost invariably he looks to the Lord for, comfort and help. And, so I think our religion, played a big part in it. Disturbs me no end when some people in this country tend to downgrade it or refuse to recognize what part it plays in our society.
You know, Herman, if you hear that story of what happened at Midway, there's just one plane that they couldn't get off, and that was the one that was supposed to look at the site where the Americans were. I mean, that's just almost just too much to be just coincidence, looking back over all these years.
Right. One final question, Admiral. Have you heard of the vision that George Washington had at Valley Forge at the lowest moment of the Revolutionary War, where he was given a vision of the great wars that America would be in, and those that have read it say that there is one more, and in that last vision he saw the army and navies of both Europe and Asia coming to the mainland of America, and there was great battle, which finally we were with Providence able to prevail, but not without great destruction. Have you heard of his vision there?
Well, of course, I've heard quite a bit about his capability, and in fact, it turned out later that he was certainly a worldwide prophet. In terms of anticipating the difficulties that the new country was going to experience in worldwide context. So I'm quite confident that he was thinking all the time about the future and about how we could, during that very dangerous beginning we had, when it could have, the whole country could have collapsed again. George Washington was always looking to the future. So I don't know that I know the details of what you're talking about, but I'm confident he was thinking all the time about what we were going to have to deal with in the future.
Certainly, Herman, he was known at that time as first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. And people wanted to become the king, and he refused absolutely even to consider that having just fought a revolutionary war to get away from a monarchy. He was truly a great American. Tragically, we no longer celebrate his birthday, and our kids know far more about Marilyn Monroe than they do about George Washington. But thank you so much. Anything else you wanted to ask?
No, thank you for your time.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Continue listening. Bye-bye.
All right, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, we've been talking about the Second World War, a time when America really was in jeopardy. And but as we look at what's happening today, I believe that America, once again, is approaching a time of jeopardy and danger. What are your thoughts on that, Admiral? Do you have any thoughts about what's happening geopolitically today and America's declining military ability? It seems that we are nowhere near as strong as we were when Ronald Reagan was in the White House a decade and a half ago.
Yes, I think that during the Clinton administration, we had different objectives, different standards that the commander-in-chief was setting for the young people, and I'm confident that that is turning around now, and that I've said many times, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the young people, but they must have leadership.
Well,
so I'm very optimistic now about the future.
Well, of course, they have to have leadership that they respect, and I think that that is the primary thing. When you go into battle, you have to really trust your superiors, and you have to be willing to fight and even lay down your life. And you're not going to do that if you don't have people that that you really believe in. And certainly, that was the spirit we had during the Second World War. I mean, we had tremendous loyalty on the part of the American fighting man, didn't we?
Yes, but under the political correctness cover, what has been happening is there's been a organized effort, and some sources, you know what they are, to, in effect, prevent the soldiers from becoming warriors. In other words, fighters.
Right.
And so I think that's very dangerous, and I'm confident that's going to be reversed.
Well, I hope and pray that this will happen under the new administration, and that we will have a strong military to support us, because, as Plato had said, you know, only the dead have seen the end of war.
And well, I would say that, you know, there have been too many social changes imposed on the military, and when that's done, there's one fundamental question you ask. If you do this, will it improve combat capability? And if it doesn't improve the fighting stance of the personnel, don't do it.
Well, it seems that they have been those who've wanted to use the military for various types of social engineering. Feeling that this was an ideal place to manipulate people, but I don't think that this is going to make our country stronger. And certainly the military is the last place you want to use social engineering, because, of course, if the military fails or falters anywhere along the line, the country is doomed to destruction.
Absolutely. You've got it.
Well, Admiral, I really want to thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us. What parting thought would you like to leave for our listeners today, after having served in our country for well over half a century?
Well, I could talk a long time on that, but I think that, this wonderful country where we have unsurpassed freedom and whatever, in my view, we should recognize that we can do anything that's necessary. We have the capability. We are a technical nation. We come up with all kinds of medical and technical devices that the facts are that no one else can seem to be able to do, and that it makes me mad when I hear people say, well, we can't do that. Too hard, and it costs too much, and it won't work anyway. Well, I tell those people, that our country can do anything if the people get behind it. And it's a wonderful place to live. And I say that anyone that doesn't like this country can go somewhere else.
God bless you, sir, and thank you so much for being with us. It is a great country, and we need to preserve it for generations yet unborn. And thank you for being with us, and thank you for all you've done for America.
Well, thank you, sir, and good luck to you, and you're doing a great job.
Bye-bye. Okay, friend, that was Admiral Thomas Moore, and I hope you've had an enjoyed the interview. This truly is historic. This is a man who has served his country well through many, many wars, the Second World War and Korea and Vietnam, and as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he was certainly instrumental in much of the military strategy during the Vietnam era. And so that's an entirely different story, but perhaps we can cover that in more detail some other time. Under any circumstances, I want to reiterate what he said. America is a great country. Sometimes we're very, very critical of it. We're not critical of the country or the spirit of the country or the founders of the country or the Constitution. We're critical of the wicked men who have usurped power and are using the military and financial strength of this country to change the world. And that's, of course, the story of the Brotherhood of Darkness. Who were these people? What was their objectives? And, of course, many of these people have a different world vision. They worship a different God. And so our plea to you is become informed, become educated, and help us to educate others and to preserve this wonderful society that we have inherited from generations past so that we can pass the torch of freedom to those who will come after us. And so remember again our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America and pray for a revival in America, because if we don't get people back in tune with God, if we don't have a revival in this country, if we don't change the hearts of men, then America as a nation will soon cease to exist, because there's no incidents in all history where a nation has turned against God, where God has not eventually brought his wrath on that nation. And then we ask you to pray for our ministers, that they may become the leaders in this truly spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And please remember Radio Liberty and pray for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we have another fascinating, fascinating interview, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.